Helicaster Jane Show airs Wednesdays, 3 p.m. Eastern. The podcast always available online at HelicasterJane.com.
Abortion.
Abortion.
Abortion. Okay. And let me tell you why I want to talk about it. I want to talk about abortion because that Supreme Court the other day made me so happy mm-hmm. that they took that state of Texas that has got too much damn yes. testosterone
yes.
and said, yeah. scrunch to your you know what, because, you know, now, Schifrin, you're a Republican. Talk to me, darling. I know that you probably don't want to talk about this.
I really don't, but...
I really don't, but... But she, Republican Lisa Schifrin, will talk about abortion and Caitlyn Jenner and Hillary Clinton, and you won't believe what else. When today on the Helicaster Jane Show, there's nothing off limits to talk about. Not from my first guest, the author of the most controversial book of this election season so far, Crisis of Character, a White House Secret Service officer discloses his firsthand experience with Hillary, Bill, and how they operate, Gary J. Byrne. And in our second half hour, Four Broads Talking, a panel discussion with four dynamic, smart, sassy women of varied political opinions and persuasions, Sheila Weller, Lisa Schifrin, and Lisa DiPaolo, and me bringing up the rear. It's all things politics on today's The Helicaster Jane Show. We'll be back in a minute with Gary Byrne. But first, welcome. I am your host, Helicaster Jane. Today, The Helicaster Jane Show is brought to you by our new partner, our favorite store, the finest in offering gourmet foods, Dean and DeLuca. And remember, The Helicaster Jane Show is always available online at HelicasterJane.com and a host of venues, including Stitcher.com, Spreaker.com, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, SoundCloud, the iHeartRadio Network, and at our newest home on Google Play Music. Gary J. Byrne, who had a 29-year career as a law enforcement professional, enlisted in the U.S. Air Force in 1982. He became part of the Air Force Security Police, whose assignments sometimes included guarding Air Force One. He received the Good Conduct Medal, the Air Force Longevity Service Award Ribbon, the Air Force Small Arms Expert Marksmanship Ribbon, and more. He started as a uniformed U.S. Secret Service officer stationed at the White House from July 1991 at the end of the George H.W. Bush administration until 1998, near the end of the Bill Clinton administration. He received awards and commendations regularly from his superiors, including a certificate of award the Bill Clinton appointed Secret Service Director. Clinton's Housing and Urban Development Secretary Henry Cisneros, in December 1995, praised Byrne for his firm authority and said that the United States of America is fortunate to have him in such a position of responsibility protecting the President. While serving as a Secret Service officer, as a member of the Uniformed Division of the Secret Service, Gary protected President Bill Clinton and the First Family in the White House. After serving as a U.S. Air Marshal, Gary retired. His new, highly controversial book, Crisis of Character, discloses his firsthand experience with Hillary and Bill and how they operate. Let's talk. So first, let me start with this, Gary. Thank you so much for your service to our country. You are a true patriot. I don't care whether anybody agrees with you or they don't agree with you. You certainly have given your life to service, and for that, I am personally grateful. You come from where? You come from Pennsylvania, from God's country, huh?
I do. Well, actually, I come from right outside of Philadelphia.
From Philly,
suburbs. Yeah.
Right. Not too far from where I grew up. I grew up in New Jersey. So listen to me. You served in the U.S. in many ways. Ultimately, you became a member of the Uniformed Division of the Secret Service. And their job is, explained to me, is it slightly different from the suits of the Secret Service?
It is. So the Secret Service agents, they're the guys you see in the suits and who do the inner circle protection of the president. And they also run the Secret Service. And then there's other divisions, and one of them is the Uniform Division, and that's what I was in. And the Uniform Division are the armed police officers that protect the White House, the Vice President's residence. They do the counter-sniper details for the President. They do the bomb-sniffing canine dogs. We do the emergency response teams at the White House, at the Vice President's residence, and there's other jobs that they do inside the White House complex.
Okay. So let's put this out there. Let's just get, because this book has taken on a life of its own. A lot of the networks have not been willing to take you on, and I don't get that, but that's the fact. And there are several high-level members of the Secret Service presidential details, including the president of the Association of Former Agents of the United States Secret Service, who bills itself as being, quote-unquote, bipartisan, nonpartisan, who are blasting you, right? For writing Crisis of Character, saying members strongly denounce the book, which they feel has made security harder by eroding the trust between agents and the people they protect. I want to talk to you about this. They assert that in your job as a UD, there is no way you could have seen what you say you saw in the book. Here's the quote.
Right.
All right, let me read the quote. There is no place for any self-moralizing narratives, particularly those with an underlying motive, reads the statement from the group's board of directors, which says Byrne has politics and profit on his mind. But let me also say this, Gary. You were apparently, despite what they said, close enough to the Clintons to be asked to testify before the grand jury by Ken Starr.
Right.
So respond to these guys.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I wasn't asked to testify. I was forced to testify. I was the first employee of the Secret Service to be ordered, forced to testify. I was subpoenaed six times in order to testify against the President of the United States in a criminal case. And eventually, I was ordered to testify by the head of the Supreme Court, Judge Rehnquist. And this is assertion that I'm just profiting. Listen, when that retired agent and that whole agency went to open their checkbook, then we'll talk about, you know, how my checkbook is getting filled. And the second thing is these stories, a lot of these stories, you know, you've heard before. But this is me telling my life story and telling them how these stories affected me in the first person. And you know where they heard these stories the first time? They heard them from these Secret Service agents sitting around an expensive restaurant eating a free steak and a couple martinis, telling these stories to other. And I don't have anything against them before, but don't come out and give me static about it. Their whole action is to protect the Secret Service. But, you know, after working in the Secret Service Uniform Division for about 3 years, I came to the conclusion that they're more worried about protecting the Secret Service than they are the President of the United States. They do many, many things that people would seem bizarre to most people. And they don't treat their employees very well. Now, this isn't between me and the Secret Service. It's between me and really Mrs. Clinton. I want people to understand, when they read my true story of my life, Crisis of Character, I want them to understand that Mrs. Clinton's character is not up to par to be President of the United States.
Okay,
they weren't up to par to be Secretary of State, and she wasn't a very good First Lady.
Okay, so let's look at some of my observations. Right, and you, absolutely, it's yours, and you are entitled to yours. So let me talk to you about this. Your portrayal of Hillary as a woman with a temper like no other. That's news, because I don't remember reading that anywhere. So I think this is, you know, why your book is something everybody should pay attention to and not just throw away. She threw things. She gave Bill a black eye. She has a potty mouth.
Sure.
Talk to me.
Sure. So when you read my book, I describe the incident where they had this fight. Now, to keep it in perspective and keep it completely true and honest, I wasn't up there in private living quarters. I don't know what happened, but here's what I do know. I don't know what happened, how the vase got broke, or how he actually got the black eye. Here's what I do know, that when I came in that morning, the people on duty that night, the agents, were reporting to everybody that there had been a huge fight. And it was so loud that the staff members to take care of them were downstairs and trying to get away from it. The sound was reverberating through that old building, down the elevator shafts and the stairwells. And during that large argument, a loud argument, they heard a crash. And when it was investigated, they found this broken. Now, it's been reported that it was a lamp. It was not a lamp. It was a blue vase. And the way I know this is because after I heard the story, and having worked at the White House for quite a few years by that time, I understood how the White House worked. And I knew if there was a something damaged, it would be in the curator's office. So I walked down the hallway to the curator's office, opened the door, and looked in. And the curator was sitting there, and she looked at me like, can I help you? You know, aggravated. And I looked down, and there was this cardboard box with the broken vase in it. So that's connecting the dots.
Surely, listen, do I know that you threw it at him? No, I know it was broken. I know they were fighting. And then the next time I saw the president in the Oval Office sometime later, he did have a black mark under his eye, a black eye, and they were trying to hide it with makeup.
So, I mean, yeah, you put two and two together, and that's what you came up with.
Yeah, and it also goes in and fits right into place with all the stories we heard that weren't true, that were just made up by the right-wing media of their behavior in Arkansas. It's the same thing that we heard from the state police in Arkansas and the sheriffs and the local Secret Service agents that were stationed in that area. And it's just the way they live their lives, which is fine, but it doesn't make her give her the character to be commander in chief.
Okay.
And I witnessed many episodes. I witnessed many experiences where
Gary, talk back
for
into
for
your
no
Gary. Let me interrupt you. Talk back into your phone because
sure.
It was clear for a minute and then it went unclear again. I don't know what that is. Did you move the phone?
Yeah, I moved it from one side to the other. I'm sorry.
Yeah, put it back where it was because we had some good sound going there for a minute. Let me ask you this, Gary. You understand Bill's magic. You offer up quite a picture of the former president,
sure.
Much of it good. All that talent, all the women, the shrill wife you portray. Is there anything,
right.
Tell me the truth, in your heart, that you have compassion for them, for him, for her? Is there anything that you can say good about them?
Well, I mean, I tell some light, funny stories about them in my book, Crisis of Character. But to answer your question right now, I will say that not when it comes to Mrs. Clinton, I really don't. I don't see what the big deal is. I don't see, you know, she's always been portrayed as this great lawyer, and apparently that wasn't true. And I mean, how is it that when I get subpoenaed to testify on her husband, forced to testify against her husband because of his behavior, that, you know, we have to, myself and the uniform division officers and the agents that were subpoenaed, we had to tell the truth, nothing but the truth, that they were going to arrest us and fire us. But when she goes and testifies in criminal cases and her husband, they can say, I don't remember, I don't recall. It's a double standard. And nobody, you and I could never get away with that. And but they do.
Right.
And I'll be honest with you, I don't have any redeeming values of Mrs. Clinton. The president, you know, there may be something in there. But here's the thing about President Clinton. He's, like all humans, we're all flawed. But he's so incredibly flawed. I mean, he's a nice guy and he's charming. But, I mean, would anybody with any common sense, would you trust him driving home your 27-year-old niece? No, you wouldn't. He just can't seem to control himself. And so... You know, I really don't have a lot of positive things to say about him, although in the book I do describe some lighthearted moments that were a part of my life and I enjoyed them.
Right. You were watching what you describe as nothing less than chaos in the Clinton White House. I got to ask you, did you take notes? I mean, when you're watching all that, I would have been sneaking off and taking notes. I would have been writing all this down and going, oh, my God, would anybody believe this? Did you ever, or were you just so stupefied by what you were seeing?
It kind of goes both ways to a certain extent. So we're trained police officers, and the first thing you learn in training, because all police officers are supposed to take contemporaneous notes. So there was a time when I took notes, the little scribbles in my calendar book that I kept with me, to kept track of where I worked every day. But really, most of this is from memory. And it's also from memory, you know, burned into my memory because it was so, in some cases, tragic, and in some cases, so bizarre. I mean, think about this. The President of the United States had to go and testify eventually once he got caught lying about his relationship with a 21 or 22-year-old intern that he was basically, the government was paying to be his playmate, and when he's supposed to be running the country. I mean, does it get any crazier than that?
Not for me to comment, but boy, I sure would like to comment. I sure would like to comment. Listen to me. This has got to have been very stressful, though. To be in a White House that's and these kind of things going, and you know you're being subpoenaed, did you ever just want to say, I quit?
No, you know, I know it's, to some people this might be hard to believe because I've kind of broken that silence that I was supposed to have. But no, I was in for a penny, in for a pound. I loved everything about the job. Even the stressful things and the bad times I talk about now, I enjoyed it. You know, I liked to work there. I thought I'd stay there forever. But as time went on and this stuff weighed on my conscience, I tried to get further and further away. And then in 2003, after we were attacked on 9/11, the Air Marshal Service opened up and it gave me the opportunity to try to, you know, break, get a little bit more distance and still keep my government job. So, but yeah, it did weigh on me and it weighed on my coworkers greatly. And some of them didn't recover so well. You know, there's instances of the pressure buckling them and, you know, the issues with alcohol. And so,
and I get that it's a tough job. But nobody has ever experienced what we experienced with the Clintons. Nobody. I know all. I've heard all the stories about the Kennedy supposedly. I've had nothing. When you sit down and you think about President Bill Clinton's 8 years, if you took every scandal and word processed it, printed it on a piece of paper, a single space, you couldn't fit it on two papers. Think about that.
Right. Yeah.
But all the good things he was supposed to do, he could probably put on a postcard, half a postcard.
Gary,
so
true.
He promised all these.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Well, you were going to finish. Go ahead.
He promised all these good things and got people to vote for him. And then when he got in there, he basically continued the crazy lifestyle of doing nothing but chasing women and having a good time. He basically would be knocking people off. So.
In the book, you tell a story. Is it true? During a photo op, President Clinton guided your hands to the First Lady's bum?
Yeah, it's one of the same things.
We
were lucky enough to get a photograph with my wife and I at this one Christmas with the President and the First Lady. And, as soon as he saw me, he recognized me and he said hi and he thanked Jenny for coming. And, you got to quickly stand next to each other. So I'm standing next to the First Lady. And the President reaches behind and grabs my hand and puts my hand right on the top of her rear end, her bum. And then after I walked out, my wife and I'm walking down the hallway and I'm saying, this is really weird. And I told her. And my wife said, oh, so you put your hand on top of her rear end. That's nothing. The whole time he was rubbing my back, And we laughed. I mean, we didn't, don't get me wrong, it didn't offend us. We were nice enough. They were nice enough to invite us. It was, they'd been up since 6 o'clock in the morning. It was 9 o'clock at night, and they probably had taken 300 photos and had taken another 300 before the end of the night. And I thought it was his way of, a little levity and a little dull humor, and I thought it was funny.
Gary, why'd you wait so long to write this? How many years has this been now? I can't do the math.
Sure. The reason I waited to now is because I couldn't write this story while I was still. First of all, I never thought I would write it. But once I decided to write it, it was about a year and a half ago, roughly. And I had to wait until I wasn't working for the government anymore. I mean, clearly I've walked through some kind of door or threshold when it comes to keeping my silence. And there's no going back. But I think it's worth the risk. I think people need to know that Mrs. Clinton, read my book. She's not fit for duty. She's not commander-in-chief material. And clearly, if you want to be honest with yourself, if you looked at her the way she conducted herself, the Secretary of State, your own server, you put people in a dangerous place like Libya, Benghazi, and you don't give them the equipment that they need. I'm sorry, that's not commander-in-chief. That's not leadership. It's not character. The average person just needs to, read my book, read some other stuff, and separate the politics. Look at the behavior and look at the character, and she shows that she's really not fit for this job.
Gary, there's some pretty darn graphic details in the book about DNA evidence, right?
Sure.
I mean, I wonder.
It is crazy.
It is crazy, and I have to tell you, I wanted to take a shower after reading some of this, but I want to ask you this. I want to say to you, if you thought at all that if you wrote this, that maybe it would be appearing as piling on. That's, if we keep running these stories over and over and over again, do we diffuse the power of them? I mean, is that a thought that crossed your mind?
Yeah, sure it did. And also, speaking to that directly, the original name of my book was going to be Fence Jumpers to Hijackers. It was a little bit more about my life. But once we got to the point where we had a publisher and a contract, they wanted to focus on, and understandable, focus on the salacious stuff that revolved around the Clintons and her behavior. And as I kept writing the book, and it became so clear that this person is not fit to be President of the United States. And I'll argue with you that she wasn't fit to be Secretary of the State either. But
right.
And it's not about piling on. It's about telling the truth. It's
okay.
Easy for Mrs. Clinton's talking minions that, to come and attack me. And they're attacking somebody who's a veteran and attacking somebody who's spent 25 years protecting this country. And I get that what I'm saying is controversial, but it is true. It is the way it happened. It's my life story. And, I hope if people are nice enough to read it, that they'll enjoy it.
Right.
Get an education from it.
Right. Complete the sentence for me. All right.
Yes, ma'am.
Hillary Clinton should not ever become the President of the United States because...
Because she has no character.
Gary, you stand to make a lot of money off of this book. On the other hand, your reputation is on the line. I'm sure that you had to weigh all of this in your head before you put your name on that, and I respect that. Character does count, doesn't it?
It does. It does count. And would I subject myself? I mean, there's not going to be any amount of money that's going to, counterbalance the attacks that I'm getting, and I'm going to get even more. It's going to get even crazier, I'm sure. But it's worth the risk. People need to know what the truth is. I mean, just look at it from this perspective. You know, the people in the Secret Service saying you're never supposed to come forward. What if instead of it was a sexual scandal, what if a protectee accidentally in a car accident killed somebody? Is the Secret Service supposed to stay quiet then? I mean, where do you draw the line? Right. Clearly, I've drawn my line. And I'm not saying it's the right thing, but I believe it's the right thing. It's the right thing for me. People need to know what the truth is, and they need to study up on their history. And as far as the Clintons go, read my book, read some other books, make a good decision. And most importantly, everybody that's of age to vote, get registered and vote, and vote your conscience and vote, you know, educate yourself and vote. That's the important thing.
So listen, speaking of voting, nobody's listening, just you and me. Okay. Whisper in my ear. You voting for Trump?
Yeah.
You voting for Trump?
I'm not really sure yet. I'm trying to keep, as crazy as it sounds, I'm trying to keep politics out of it. We'll see what happens, when things shake out.
I've been speaking with Gary J. Byrne, author of Crisis of Character, a White House Secret Service officer discloses his firsthand experience with Hillary, Bill, and how they operate, by way of Center Street, a division of the Hachette Book Group. For more information, visit centerstreet.com. You are listening to the Hallie Kesser-Jane Show. My guests today are Gary J. Byrne, author of Crisis of Character, and Sheila Weller, Lisa DiPaolo, Lisa Schifrin, of our panel, Four Broads Talking. We'll be back in a minute. Stay with us. Smart, sassy, fun, frank, fearless are words to describe my next guest, of which I am one of Four Broads Talking, about politics, culture, or whatever the heck fuels our fancy. Let me introduce the panel. First, Sheila Weller, a frequent guest on the Hallie Kesser-Jane Show. Sheila has been called a galographer for her 2-3 iconic woman biographies, Girls Like Us, the beloved 2008 bestseller about Carole King, Joni Mitchell, and Carly Simon, and 2014's The News Sorority about Diane Sawyer, Katie Couric, and Christiane Amanpour. Sheila writes about culture, history, fabulous lives, and social issues for Vanity Fair, Marie Claire, Glamour, Elle, the New York Times Book Review, and others. She got there first on the O.J. Simpson case with her news-filled raging heart. She says she's a moderate liberal. Well, we'll see. She's a Beverly Hills native and a UC Berkeley grad who often regales the good old days of the counterculture. Also with us, Lisa DiPaolo, who has for many years been considered a magazine journalist, one of New York's sharpest and most incisive long-form writers on politics, big headline true crime, Lacey Peterson, Chandra Levy, Robert Durst are some of the stories she's written, and celebrity profiles. A native of Scranton and graduate of Penn, she's written for George, working closely with her friend, the late John Kennedy Jr. Vanity Fair, Talk, GQ, Vogue, New York, Harper's Bazaar, More, and others. She has a razor-sharp wit and no-nonsense common sense. Politically, she calls them as she sees them, and she usually wins her good-natured social media arguments. Last but not least, Lisa Schifrin. She was a speechwriter for Vice President Dan Quayle, who crafted Quayle's enduringly famous takedown of Murphy Brown for being a single mom and sparked meaningful debate about welfare reform. A senior fellow at the Independent Women's Forum, she generally takes a dark view of the direction our culture and institutions are heading. A native New Yorker, a Bryn Mawr grad, the mother of three daughters, she spent time covering Pakistan and Afghanistan. She has a cool wryness, and her Republican opinions don't keep her from befriending lots of Democrats. And, of course, there's me. Let's see what happens when we all sit down to talk.
Go, so, okay, guys, let's get this party rolling.
Hey, Hallie.
You know, hello, everybody. Hey, so nice to have all of you here. I love you all. You know that. So let's begin with this. Let's just jump right in. Two blue-eyed blondes in blue, Lisa DiPaolo. You brought this one up. Hillary and Elizabeth Warren on the campaign trail together dressed like friggin' bookends.
Yes. And I kept watching saying, okay, was this an accident or was this planned? It had to be planned.
Of course.
Right?
Of course. Are you kidding?
But why? I mean, you know, they were this little... You know, Patty Duke, and you know, it was a little too right.
Yeah,
the Patty Duke show.
Ugly color. Royal blue is kind of an ugly color. It's not an attractive color.
Yeah, but it's the color of the Democratic Party.
They can't wear red.
No, right, exactly.
But they all wanted to. Well, they all wanted to match. Yeah, I'm sorry, Lisa. Go, Lisa S.
They can't wear red.
Right.
Yes, because that's the GOP.
Nobody looks good in yellow. Pink is too girly.
Yes.
Blue is kind of their only choice. I myself would have gone with navy, but I'm conservative that way.
Okay, what do you mean you're conservative? Wait a minute. Wait. Lisa Schifrin, our Republican, is conservative that way, Lisa?
Well, another way, also that way, I think black and navy and taupe are excellent colors for serious women. But
I do too.
But
the real problem, with with Elizabeth Warren and Hillary Clinton is that you're doubling down on something that half of the electorate rejects. You know, if she puts in a man or a moderate or maybe a Hispanic, although I think that's a bad idea because a woman is radical enough, there's a shed. People can find things they like. Balancing the ticket, that is the one given in picking a vice president. Doubling down on these blue stocking women who want to control the world and your life too, I think that's a terrible idea.
I think Tom's and will be a good choice for that reason.
Tim Kaine. But Tim Kaine, guess what? Number one, they weren't both in blue. If you really saw, like somebody wrote today, that Hillary was in lavender pajamas and one was purple and one was blue. So, okay. But you know what? The point about these two women is that they finally seem to actually like each other, which we haven't seen before. There was a chemistry between them.
Right? Yeah, and who knows how true it is. Let me make this point. Why is she moving to the left? She needs to, when she's going to win this election, Hillary's going to win it in the center. Right. So taking somebody on from the far left of the Democratic Party, that's very nice to bring the lefty Dems who don't like her all that, you know, at the moment. They'll come around. But I don't think it's a smart move for the general. You guys, what do you think?
I agree with you.
I think totally. I think right now she needs to make nice with the Bernie voters. And the Bernie voters, if there's anyone they like even better than Bernie.
I am so sick of them.
It's Elizabeth Warren.
Me too.
You might be sick of them. But you know what? If they don't show up for her, and especially if they go to Trump, you lose. So I'm hoping that this doesn't work because I myself would like to see Hillary not win. But
But do you want Trump to win, Lisa?
Do you want Trump to win, Lisa? Really do? You have to answer that question.
You know what?
Lisa,
I'm just going to have to say yes, because if those are the two choices, then I make that choice. I am a never Hillary person. Do I like Trump? I do not. Do I respect his intellect? No. But I think he will make a fine president, or anyway, he will make an adequate president. And here is what I think. I think when you've got two people with low character, and I would describe both of them that
way. Thank you. That's true.
Then you go straight on policy, and the policies I support will be enacted in a Trump administration and not in a Hillary administration. And maybe Trump won't even do them. There's a possibility. But with Hillary, it's a dead certain that she will just double down on everything Obama's done. And to me, that's a disaster.
Okay. So let me bring this in.
I did an
interview with Gary Burns, which you guys couldn't hear, unfortunately, about the book Crisis of Character, okay? And there are a couple of things about this that I want to get into, because I think this has to do with what you just said, Lisa Schifrin, that nobody has any character in all of this. I'm not sure that that's entirely true.
I don't believe that, by the way, but
right.
Go ahead.
I like Hillary's character.
All right. So
I do, too.
So that being said.
True believers, you're all true believers.
Right. Not true.
No, you can't say that about me, Lisa Schifrin, because I've gone back and forth on this. Hillary's had to really sell me this trip. Not last time, but she did this trip, and you guys know that. But here's the bottom line on this. So I have Gary on the show, and I say to him, he says the whole thing about Hillary's character. And then I said to him at the end, I said, so you're going to vote for Trump? Because if you're telling me you're not voting for Hillary because it's a crisis of character, then tell me that Trump is any better on character.
He
refused to answer the question. He just laughed it off. I can't answer. I'm not bringing in politics now. My point being, Republicans.
I'm not bringing in politics. I just wrote this huge
hatchet job. But here's my thing. Republicans keep doing this. Hillary, yeah. Bad character. But you cannot tell me that Trump has good character. So how do you justify? You can't fight Hillary on character if you're not going to admit that Trump has a bad character issue.
Wait a minute. So I have an answer for this.
Good. I want to hear it.
The answer is that nobody on the left acknowledges. I mean, the right looks at Trump and knows exactly who he is. Whether you are pro or anti-abortion or free market, you know exactly where he is because he's been very clear about it. And
no, he hasn't.
Not about abortion.
Hang on.
Go ahead.
For funding Planned Parenthood. He is not anti-abortion, even if he's had some revelations. I mean, he's a total social liberal. We all know this.
Right.
But
okay.
He's aggressive about those issues, and he won't be. He doesn't care. You know what? Very few Republican presidents have actually cared about that. They give it rhetorical homage, and then they walk away. So that's not such a departure for us. I think that getting the left, getting Hillary supporters to acknowledge just how corrupt she is, and really in many ways how venal, how... What a lie.
Oh, okay, now stop this right now. Wait a minute. Stop this.
You're welcome to disagree, but that's the difference. So I'm willing to say I don't think Trump has a great character, but I think Hillary's is worse.
Okay, but I have to say this. Having just read this book that nobody else has read yet, and I read it from cover to cover, talked to this guy, and this guy wants to nail her on character. This is my question to you, Lisa Schifrin, which is where I was going before we went off our beaten track. My question becomes, what is with Republicans who keep going after Hillary? Has never been convicted of anything anybody has ever brought against her in all the years this woman has been in office. So what character fault does she have? Tell me that.
You know, not being convicted. First of all, there's a long list of scandals.
Not being convicted.
We all know the scandals.
Wait a minute. Not being convicted. This is a land of laws. And if you're going to attack her and say she broke laws, she killed people.
You know what? You don't get convicted unless somebody really brings charges.
Well, they had the opportunity and they didn't do it. This bothers me.
Well, that has to do with being, at first, the first lady. We don't do this. You know, we don't.
DePaulo, open up a mouth here.
I think they were attacked. From the moment they got into office, I think she was right about the vast right-wing conspiracy. I think she was completely right about it.
I do too.
Unfortunately, the Monica thing happened, and that was really unfortunate.
And that, by the way, is him, not her.
Right.
But the Whitewater thing had happened way before that.
And did they convict them?
The commodities dealing.
Did they convict them?
Personal enrichment schemes.
Who cares about Whitewater?
Wait a minute. Lisa Schifrin.
Who has not done personal enrichment schemes?
And Donald Trump. Trump, who brings everybody down and declares bankruptcy?
Wait, is that a real question?
Which
that's
one?
A real question.
I think there are people who make money.
Rich,
no, making money. So I would say that making money, honestly, is a fair thing. And good thing. But I would say
not when you bring other people down. Not when you bring other people down.
Selling influence is a very bad thing.
Well, I don't know any politician
Lisa.
Who doesn't do that.
Lisa.
Let's get real.
Yeah.
You cannot for a minute say that Trump made money honestly. You can't. Look at the
Trump
people.
University.
That have that, forget Trump University. Like, I mean, that's one example, absolutely, but look at everything else. Look at the people in Atlantic City who he screwed, okay?
If never been indicted or never been charged or found guilty, if that's our standard, he's never been
deported
over most of
the
time.
Okay, but that's the same. Wait a minute. Let me jump in on this because you just said exactly, you were defending him for exactly what you won't defend Hillary for. Let me just say this. Number one, they're all crooks. So, you know, let's not be naive about this. They all do what they have to do to get where they have to go. That's why they are who they are. And that's why they get to the top of the chain.
I wouldn't say they're all crooks. I certainly wouldn't call her a crook.
Okay. Well, you're sweet.
So they're all,
You're sweet.
Thank you, Julie.
And you're naive.
Sweet. Okay. I'm sweet.
And you are. And you're and deliciously naive. I'm going to bust you now. But I'm going to.
That's okay.
I know it's okay. But I'm simply saying that you can't use one argument for one and not for the other. I think the thing is, maybe it's sad that we keep talking about
this. Except there's a difference between the public and the private realm.
I don't know how.
Tell me that the mob.
Yes, and you know what?
They get more permission being private and stealing from people than you do from the public. Let me just say what I was going to say about this is why do we keep talking about this? Maybe if we got onto the issues, this country wouldn't be in a lot better shape and would be a lot more united, because that's a real argument. And we spend so much time these days on this garbage
that in the long run is meaningless. It's a game. Anybody else
exactly.
on that?
Exactly.
I agree. I agree. Okay. So on the issue.
We all agree with that.
Okay, so before we shoot ourselves to death and bang each other, let's get on an issue. Let's get on gun control.
Okay, Lisa,
gun.
Said the word abortion. Yeah.
Oh, I'm going for gun control first. Let's go for gun control.
Oh, okay.
Before we all shoot each other off. That's my little metaphor there. But so somebody take that one up.
I loved what happened in the House last week. I think it was I think it is the new civil rights movement. I think it is one issue. It's always stunned me that same-sex marriage and transgender rights have sped ahead and become the issues that have everything's changed on them, including that somebody can change their driver's license to binary, you know, non-binary, and yet the simplest, the most simple, basic common sense gun control issues, like, you know, people on no-fly lists have to have background checks, that we can't get a vote on it. I think Paul Ryan was shameful. Shame, shame, shame. And I think it's the new civil rights issue. So that's what I think of gun control. Yeah.
Now, Shifrin, you must have something to say on this one.
Yeah, I disagree on every single point. except that gay rights have sped ahead. That's literally true.
I didn't hear you. Say that again. That gay rights... Wait, I'm sorry. It didn't record. What did you say?
Sped ahead.
Okay, sped ahead.
Sped ahead.
So the problem, in theory, everybody wants somebody who is not allowed to fly, be terrorist missions, not to have guns. We would all agree with that. The problem with the no-fly list is that kind of wants some due process. Lots of people, including Senator Kennedy, Ted Kennedy, ended up on those lists at various moments. So you kind of can't trust the bureaucracy, even apart from the fact that you can
long
insure.
Time, so you're going way back to find that. To cherry pick that one little example.
Hayward at the Weekly Standard. There are just a bunch of examples. It doesn't matter when it was in the course of the no-fly list.
If you change the no-fly list, make it better.
So let me ask you a question, Lisa Shifrin. Let me ask you a question.
I certainly don't want guys. Look, this guy, remember the guy in Orlando. A lot of people called the attention of the FBI to him. A lot of people, including people who didn't sell him guns, who would have made money selling him guns and chose not to. Because they called the FBI. The FBI did nothing. So we've got a different problem, which is political correctness.
Well, let me jump in on that one, seeing that I live around the corner from where this guy lived, and I live around the corner from where this all happened, okay? So let's talk about that. You know, the FBI and all the neighbors around where I'm living are freaking out because this is not the first time that this has happened where somebody got off around here. This is a terrorism haven because it's sort of countrified around, you know, Bureau.
Right.
So
it's Florida.
Well, that's true too. It's like California was, you know, 1,000 years ago in our friend's day, Sheila's day. But we're the new California. But let me say this: down here, you can get away with murder. Where I am, not down in South Florida. Right. I'm in Central Florida because there are no sheriffs here. There's no nothing here. You can drive down the street and you won't see another car, you know, that looks like a cop car. And these people, that's why the guys who the airport here was where they trained for 9/11. And there is like country bumpkin third rate FBI here. And that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is true.
You
and the terrorist types find it.
It's true in parts of upstate New York where we have Islamic training camps. Everybody understands that has occurred in a bunch of places, all rural and all out
absolutely,
of the
absolutely. But my point to you is this, though, on this issue. So it's inconvenience. If you're not supposed to be on that, fine. You live with it and you say, look, this is me. I'm clean. Take me off. Yeah. Let me whatever. But the greater good, children getting mowed down by guns.
Right.
It's bizarre.
Kelly,
well, I think that's a different issue. No, wait, the issue there is mental health. And, you know,
mental health comes into all of it. It did with Mateen, too. He was completely screwed up.
Undoubtedly, you can make an argument that all mass killers are crazy.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. But in some ways, you know, you kind of want a better notification system for that and something at the other end to kind of contain these people. I believe that. Without the Second Amendment, A, there's no First Amendment, and B, at any given moment, a government that goes fascist, and both sides are worried about the other side's candidate on that issue, on fascism, on
nobody's against the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment isn't for...
It's not being threatened by any of them. Yes, Lisa, go ahead, Lisa, you haven't had a chance.
Okay, let me say something.
Okay.
I am not anti-Second Amendment. I actually am a great shot, by the way. I have done some. I am a great shot. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. It always comes back to this basic common sense thing. Like the idea of automatic weapons and semi-automatic weapons. One of the best lines I heard recently was, you know, all these hunters, okay? You need a semi-automatic weapon for what? In case the deer start shooting back? Let's be real. Let's be real. Let's respect.
Country where there are deer and there are bears and there are moose and you don't need.
Right.
Okay. Well, let me jump in. Yeah, you're right about that, Lisa. And let me jump in on that.
The people I know who own guns, and I know a lot of people who own guns, mm-hmm. they want this. They want the right gun control so that, because you know what? It doesn't make them look good,
yeah,
okay?
Good.
They're lumped into this big category of crazy people, when in fact, there are a great many wonderfully law-abiding gun owners. So
yeah,
this idea...
Them. Like everybody who gets their gun legally is a law-abiding gun owner. And an awful lot of them really kind of share the view of the NRA and not your view.
Well, we were talking
you
about...
Do not need
all right,
an
now wait
automatic
a minute.
Weapon.
You don't, but let me bring
there
this in.
No automatic weapons... You don't even know what an automatic weapon is because those are not legal.
Oh, yes, I do.
All the guns we're talking about are semi-automatic.
Well, who needs semi-automatic? But Lisa Schifrin, wait a minute. Let me bring this in.
Yeah.
Since,
yeah,
wait a minute, guys. Let me bring this in. You were talking about people being honorable and what have you. So let's get real about this. Every Republican, every congressman or woman and senator on the right, have been bought by the NRA.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they're prostituting themselves to Wayne LaPierre, who looked like a moron, by the way. He looked like Charlton Heston when he was in the throes of Alzheimer's and nobody knew it, going off half-cocked, to use a metaphor. Come on, Lisa Schifrin. I mean, come on.
Yes.
They're bought and paid for.
I admire Wayne LaPierre. I really do.
Oh.
And I think that he's been running about... We are freedom's safest place. Why do I admire him? Because he's up against
what?
Everybody
like
in the world.
Oh, he's not up against everybody in the world is up against him.
Hang on. Do you think abortion is something people support because they're bought or because they believe? Because I think it's the same with guns. I think you can make a case for abortion. You can make a case for gun ownership widely by people who want to keep government at bay. Nobody serious believes we have guns to shoot deer. The idea is that a free citizen needs actually to be armed in case government gets out of control.
Oh my God. I mean, I'm sorry. Like, come on. Come on.
What an atavistic argument, but there it is. I believe that, and so does everybody I know.
It's hard to believe that you believe that.
Here's something I thought of, it just didn't fly. But I just thought it would be fantastic to get Wayne LaPierre to sit down with the Pope and Obama and let Pope Francis try to negotiate this.
Yeah,
I know that's crazy.
That.
I think that's a great idea.
Right.
And the day Pope Francis gives up the Swiss Guard, I think that would be a fine thing to do.
He's
surrounded by an armed guard day in, day out. So
but nobody
should be.
But that's exactly, I was going
to
say, having guns.
The rest of us need the same benefits, too.
Do you have a gun?
Nice to
why?
The
somebody
you're
coming?
Not the Pope.
Come on, you're not the Pope. Who's coming after you, Lisa?
No,
maybe after this show, they'll bang you down. But I mean, God forbid.
You're
but,
not the Pope.
Come on.
So how cool would it be if Pope Francis sat down with Obama and Wayne LaPierre and top members of Congress?
Well, Wayne LaPierre is not sitting down with the Pope because
he'll never do it.
He won't do it. He's into his power, not into what he cares.
You know, he's not an American, even. I think this is a political issue that gets decided in the United States by government, by the people, not by the
people.
How about the people? Lisa.
Okay, hold it. Let me. Go ahead.
Lisa. How about the people? The people want gun control. The vast majority.
And that is actually, you know what? The numbers on gun control outside of
90%, Lisa Schifrin. 90% of Americans are for some rational form of 90% on both sides of the aisle. No, you're wrong about that. So those are the figures, and that you got to own what
and
the figures
all
are.
All the posters
okay, we're not going to solve this one today, ladies. So let's move on, and I do want to move on.
Let's move on to something really dirty and crazy.
Bring her on. Bring on Caitlyn Jenner. Bring it on, because this one makes me crazy. Go ahead, Lisa.
Yes. Apollo, you had it. You give us a deal on that.
This makes me
here's the thing. I look at this cover of Sports Illustrated. of Caitlyn Jenner. And here's what I think. It's a classic example of media elite editors doing things for other editors and for, quote, buzz, but not for their reader. Do you think any reader of Sports Illustrated wants to see Caitlyn Jenner in a 1950s jumpsuit? It looks like something you'd serve fondue in on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Hello? This is not for their readers. And I think a big problem with why magazines are failing right now is they're not doing things for their readers. They're doing things for buzz.
Exactly. And political correct. And being politically correct.
Yep.
The bane
yep.
of America's
but
existence.
What a god-awful cover.
Well, it is. I have a problem with Caitlyn Jenner for a multitude of reasons.
I think a number of us do.
Okay. So let's... Nobody wants to talk about it because it's not politically correct to talk about it. So let's just say enough with that because let's just...
Right.
Where does she comes out in Vanity Fair, and we all love Vanity Fair, and a lot of us make our living off of Vanity Fair, but honestly, that cover was a joke. That's my personal opinion.
A lot of people thought it was a joke. A lot of people couldn't stand it.
Okay, I was offended by her coming out as a siren. That, that just...
Well, there was a great line
nuts.
That Fran Lebowitz said recently where she said she's the only person in the world who wants to be a 65-year-old woman.
Fran Lebowitz. Yes, that's a great line. Yeah.
You know, it was a great line.
Yeah. Well, there was that.
A 65-year-old woman dressing like,
a floozy.
At her peak.
In from the 1950s. And what have we all, as women, fought so hard to, you know, to diffuse that whole sexual connotation. And then she comes out.
There's another funny thing about the cover, which is there you have Caitlyn Jenner wearing a medal won by a very different person named Bruce Jenner.
Right.
Who was a man and competing as a man in the Olympics. So either it's one thing or the other.
Well,
it
isn't because Caitlyn Jenner is still half him, half her.
Caitlyn
Jenner is the same person Caitlyn Jenner has always been with a different wardrobe and some
You know, this is how transgenderism has sped ahead. You are now, if you become a trans woman like Caitlyn Jenner, you're allowed to compete as a female. That's the one part of you that never changes. Your, you know, if you're a 6'4",
your DNA,
you're gonna. It is so unfair to women,
because
women who were born female,
thing is yet another way that men are taking over the gains that women make. Look, you may not expect it, but I am actually, an old school feminist, and I believe
that the gains
women made should not actually now be handed over to men who think they're women and want to wear dresses in the name of political correctness. I think that's absurd and really it's devastating. I have
three daughters. A lot of people
I don't want my daughters competing with boys in track.
Yeah.
No, I'm so glad that you said that, Lisa Schifrin. Good for you, and that's why she's on the show, because she's so fun.
Yeah.
You never know what she's
going
to come out of her mouth next. And I think that's a really important point. This I am Kate thing, she's trying. It's like she's a Kardashian, but not quite as stylish.
And
she's a
Kardashian
point.
In money grubbing.
Yes.
I mean, this is all about money. And
Lisa S. made a great point.
Celebrity
that what's happening now is she wants it both ways. She's going to put her 1950s jumpsuit on the cover, but also wear her Bruce Jenner medal. She wants. How many women have it both ways?
Nobody has it both ways.
Nobody.
And that's it's so offensive.
I mean, she did earn the medal. That doesn't bother me as much as her huge support for Ted Cruz. Her saying Hillary is the worst thing that happened to women. That's when I started.
She gave up on Ted Cruz because Ted Cruz was not so transgender friendly. And who did she support? Donald Trump. Because he let her use the girls' bathroom at Trump Tower.
But I'm going to say one thing about this. The transgender community is kind of walking away from her a lot because they're feeling that she's not quite, up to the task of being the front for the transgender. And obviously we feel the same way. So we've said our thing about Caitlyn Jenner and God bless that cover. You know, they'll probably sell a bazillion covers just because we're talking about it.
I disagree.
Well, because we're talking about it. See, this is what's going to happen. Everybody's going to start talking about it, and that's why everybody's going to be curious, and that's how they'll
see it on social media.
Who would buy that cover?
I know.
It's an ugly cover.
Well, I can't wait to see what the numbers look like with the sale of that. I think it's also crazy.
We're going to come back and discuss that.
We will take notes on it. Everybody take notes, and we'll see what actually happens. Listen, I want to talk to. I really want to change completely. 180, but I think we have to Brexit. First of all, whoever coined that phrase Brexit, who is it? Do we know?
Genius.
And a genius. And oh my God, they should get credit for for this, but I think this is something we need to talk about. And I want to talk about it not because of the UK, because, you know, that's their problem. But I do want to talk about it. Do we think it's a harbinger of what's going to happen in our own future, in our own election? And why don't you jump in? I'm going to give it to Sheila.
I will start. I'm going to start.
Oh, you're okay. Go ahead, Shifrin.
I think saying it's a harbinger, I mean, I personally suspect it probably will be. But mostly what I think it is a symbol of the same set of people, the same kind of classes in society, and I hate to use the word class, showing a displeasure at how the international kind of governing, educational, professional elite have done so well after NAFTA and, you know, globalism, and all sorts of people who had previously been solid middle class, either a British people or Americans, you know, have actually been screwed. And we sold them out. And I myself was in favor of NAFTA at the time. I was a free trader. I sort of believed that all these cheap goods we'd be getting would be a great thing. But in the end, cheap t-shirt or higher wages for your middle class. So to me, we failed, and now it has to be undone. And the fact that this was a new issue for Hillary that she hadn't actually noticed this, because her party, the Democratic Party, left all of these people behind, I don't know, three election cycles ago.
They're Southern Democrats.
They were no better.
Yeah, no, they're Southern Democrats.
No better, no.
And I have a farm in West Virginia. Listen to what I'm telling you. That is, you know, Southern Democrats who used to be Republicans, and they go back and forth, you know, on any given day. I want to agree with you on one thing you just said, though, Lisa Shifrin. I was up for NAFTA, too. And I think it worked for a short period of time. For a very short period of time. But, you know, the world is rapidly changing, and it ain't working anymore. So we have to do something about it. I think rather than to blame what lawmakers passed, because at the time it seemed appropriate, now is a bad mistake here.
I think you're right about that.
Yeah.
There's no point. It was done. Yeah. It had its effect. Look, this is one place where Trump actually sounds statesmanlike, renegotiating those contracts. Also,
I agree with you on that,
Brexit.
Lisa Shifrin.
Making things bilateral.
Other countries,
I didn't hear what, Sheila, what did you say?
Bilateral just makes more sense than having these multinational agreements where some countries cheat and some countries manipulate their currency and some countries play straight, which we kind of did, and therefore we lost. It's not a good thing. I mean, I think it worked better when you've got people cutting the best deal that they can for their own country in their own national interest. It just strikes me as the best you're going to do in a tough world.
I don't think anybody knows what this Brexit deal is really going to do anyway. I think it's a lot of people being hysterical, but
I have an Anglophile husband who is absolutely furious at the British.
I understand that.
The most responsible thing they've ever done. Yeah.
I understand that, but I'm still saying that I think that you can't know. Nobody can really know what this will do in the long term. You can't. You don't know what's going to happen in the northern parts of the UK. You don't, you know, whether the other countries are going to come out. You don't know whether my personal fear of it is that it gives Germany and that's never a good thing. Much power. Way too much power, and that is something to be thinking of. Which means they may. But on the other hand, it takes away some of the power of you know. And I'm very pro. Yeah, exactly.
No, so, I think that's right. I think it does give Germany more power. Germany has used its power very badly, I think, in service of Europe in the last year, letting in a couple of million unassimilable immigrants because it felt good has been a disaster. And I think that, of course, they have to pay for that. That's the kind of political disaster that if Angela Merkel isn't held to account for that, then nobody's held to account for anything.
Yeah.
And I agree with that. Okay, one last topic before we get to the final close, and that's this. Benghazi. Are we done with Benghazi? Is it over? Can we all put this one to bed? Done? Yeah.
Please. I mean, I just really, this is just enough. Enough. Basta. Yeah. Basta. Yeah. This is just like again and again and again and again. And but it's what? It's going to be pulled out every minute. And
You know what? I look at it slightly differently. Surprise. Forget Benghazi. Forget the legal ramifications or trying Hillary or whatever. I would say this. As an example of a set of decisions, including not sending help and including lying, you know, just making up a story about a film and lying to the American public and to the family for no actual reason, because these are soldiers, wives and mothers. And if you said, we had an operation and it went bad and people died and we're so sorry, that's what soldiers sign up for. But the idea that they went on TV and lied to the whole country for months, to me, that's a piece of information about how Hillary Clinton and the State Department she ran behaved that I would use in evaluating her fitness as president.
I don't know. I think a judgment issue. I think that there's something interesting happened today, which is something I've been saying along. And I had Mitch Zukoff, who wrote the big book and became the movie on, you know, on the show and a couple of times. And he's a smart guy. I think the bottom line on this really was even the Republican thing said, well, you know, maybe it was, you know, the CIA and whatever, who really kind of dropped the ball on this rather than, quote unquote, Hillary. And I do think that there's something to that. Anyway, listen, I lied. I said that was the last topic. It's not. We're bringing one more in.
Okay, good. Okay, let's get into the topic.
Abortion. And let me tell you why I want to talk about it. I want to talk about abortion because that Supreme Court the other day made me so happy that they took that state of Texas that has got too much damn testosterone and said, scrunch to your you-know-what. Because, you know, now, Schifrin, you're a Republican. Talk to me, darling. I know that you probably don't want to talk about this.
I really don't, but I'm going to say one thing.
Go for it.
One thing.
Yeah.
Part of the decision, not the whole thing, was about letting abortion clinics off of the safety standard that we require of all places where surgery is done. And to me, that's a terrible thing. You know what? I am not a fan of abortion. I would like to see there be no abortion. But if there's going to be abortion, then... You know how people used to say safe, legal, and rare? They just punted on safe.
I don't think that's true at all.
They did not.
There is not a doctor, and I've talked to... Yeah,
of course you can.
No, you can't. And let me also say, vasectomies, which in a way are far more...
You wouldn't take your dog to a vet that looks like some of the charnel houses that have been certified.
Oh, come on. They were going after Planned...
So you don't have to take them to those.
Exactly. And you're going after Planned Parenthood that really does oversee that. I'm sorry, Lisa, you're wrong about that, LeShiffrin. Totally wrong about that. They do not want those requirements for men who have vasectomies, which, by the way, are far more prone to having infections than they are women who have...
Vasectomy is much more of a surgical procedure than an abortion.
So what's
the
story?
You're not cutting into someone's body. It's not a surgical procedure. And it's ridiculous.
And it's ridiculous to have male lawmakers putting that kind of screw on women. Yeah. This is 2016.
It was, as Rick Perry said, so there'd be no abortion in Texas. That was his
goal.
That was the plan.
Yep. Well, you never know what that Supreme Court is going to do next. Okay, we're at the end of our story for our oh my God, girls. You really, truly are.
We could keep going. We could have kept going.
We could keep going. I wish I had the time on the show this week, but I don't. But I'm going to end with this. I want each of you not to tell me something that I don't know. I want you to each tell me something I should know. Let's start with, so I'll give you all a chance to think. Let's start with my good friend, Sheila Weller.
Okay. Well, somebody on Facebook, our friend Jesse Cornbluth, said how horrible that Jeff Zucker chose Corey Lewandowski. Who's he going to choose next? So I went to John Klein, who had been in Jeff Zucker's job. He was the president of the head of CNN. And I asked him, and he said, Mrs. Sanders. And I thought that was a great answer.
Terrific answer.
Well, Bernie Sanders.
Jane?
Jane
Sanders. Okay, so that's who he would choose as
No, I think that's kind of funny. She needs a makeover, by the way.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. It's stuck in the
60s. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy.
But then she would not be authentic.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
And this is not sexist, because so does Bernie. But,
okay. All right, your turn.
Damn it, Sheila, you stole mine.
Uh-oh.
I wanted to talk about,
Go ahead.
No, I wanted to talk about Corey Lewandowski on CNN. Because what was Jeff Zucker smoking? Like, if anybody saw Corey's first quote, you know, exclusive interview with, you know, Dana Bash, who, by the way, did a heroic job but couldn't get a thing out of him. It was like pulling teeth because he is never going to say anything except Trump is wonderful. Trump is great, even though he was fired. What he brings to CNN, I don't know.
I know he makes it a whole lot poorer. How much is he getting for that gig? $500,000?
$500,000.
My God. We should all be Corey Lewandowski, you know?
And as somebody said to me today, here's a guy who you wouldn't buy a used car from, okay?
That's true. It's true.
Who is making $500,000 to go.
You know what? You wouldn't buy a used car from him, but he did sell a really, you know, faulty used car to half the country.
You have to give him credit for that.
Lisa S., you are right.
Yeah.
He deserves credit for bringing this guy to the nomination. Absolutely.
But that does not make him a political pundit. It only makes him knowing how to sell Donald
Trump.
That's true.
And you know what? As journalists, we all have an
As
interview.
Journalists. The
it's
business is so
analyzing.
Bad.
Yeah. But bringing in the actual people who are, you know, who do this stuff to talk talk
right.
about it. It's a very mixed bag.
Absolutely.
Look, honestly, if he added something to the discourse, and I only saw him on his debut last night, and I was like, oh, my God, are you kidding me? But if he added something to the discourse, great, great. I'm all for it, no matter what they pay him. But he's not adding anything. He's a name.
He's a name. He hired him to use the name to play off the name, and there you go.
Not even much of a name.
Well, it's enough.
I have a totally different story for you.
Okay, go. Tell.
Okay, good. Go.
And you know what? My source is going to astonish you. It would be the New York Times from yesterday.
Hmm.
There was a great story on the front page about how all the arms that the CIA is shipping into Jordan to fight against, to arm fighters against ISIS with, many of them are being diverted.
Right.
There's the Jordanian intelligence unit, which is respectable by world standards, appears to have been corrupted, and they were kind of siphoning off arms and selling them on a black market to whoever wanted them, which would be ISIS. That is to say, the CIA's carelessness was handing weapons
Terrible.
To ISIS again.
Yeah.
But here's the real point. The piece was written by someone named Mark Mazzetti, who wrote a brilliant book a couple of years ago called, I think, The Way of the Knife, where he talked about how in the Bush and the Obama years, the CIA has become an empire, how it runs its own wars, it has its own military, it functions almost as a totally separate quasi-foreign policy unit. It does not necessarily listen to people in the White House or the State Department, and nobody kind of knows what's going on. And to me, and I am a supporter of the CIA, and I think the United States needs
too.
An aggressive foreign policy. But this is out of control, and you don't let an organization like this be so widespread that it's funding everything on both sides of the map. I mean, this is just crazy.
Well, there you go. There you go. So, ladies. This is the deal.
Yes.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
We just did our first installment of Four Broads Talking. And I personally think that is the story that should be on the front page of the news. You guys are great.
This is hilarious.
And Hallie, can I just say,
what?
You have the best voice in broadcasting.
Yeah, just not today. When I do this, and I'll do this at the pro.
I love how you do this.
right. Well, you just keep talking, honey, and we'll keep having you back. It's all of that flattery, darling. This has been great, and I want to thank you all for being here. I think we did a great job, and I hope everybody who's listening, will let us know how much you love it, and we'll keep bringing this segment back.
Thanks so much for tuning in to the Hallie Catcher Jane Show, a production of RESAC LLC. Associate producer, Suzanne Probst. Music by Tony Rosales Jazz. Visit HallieCatcherJane.com.